Although I hadn't told Hank my reason for wanting to visit Cape May, I wanted to settle scores with my thieving uncle. The train was packed. We squeezed in among a family of Italian immigrants lugging hampers of pane, prosciutto, frutta, formaggio, and vino, the words most frequently used when someone would reach into the basket for yet another handful of food. To my satisfaction, I found that I could understand a good deal of their animated talk owing to my friendship with Jimmy Jimmy. By the time we pulled into Cape May at 6:05, the tourists had exhausted the words Bella, Bambini, and Bastard. A welcome sign at the station read, "The Playground of Presidents." Lincoln, before his election, William Harrison, Franklin Pierce, James Gillespie, and Ulysses S. Grant had all enjoyed themselves here. Asking directions, we meandered from the station toward the Anodyne Hotel, where we'd reserved a room on the recommendation of a welder at the Philadelphia shipyard. It wasn't far from Petticoat Lane and Uncle Sam's store. The town brought to mind Pop's description of Charleston as lacy and languorous. In the light of the gas lamps, street after street glowed in blues and greens and yellows and whites from the gaily painted Victorian gingerbread houses. On the big front porches, laughing vacationers sprawled on the swings and rocking chairs and steps, kibitzing, smoking cigarettes. You could tell the new guests from the old. Their skin glowed like steamed lobsters. Just for a gander, we ducked into one of the more spectacular guest houses on Columbia Avenue, an Italian-like villa with a gold-painted cupola on the roof and a sweeping veranda full of high-backed rockers overlooking a garden buried under hydrangeas, tiger lilies, and roses. The palatial sitting room had ornate plaster moldings, an elaborate chandelier, and a ceiling several feet higher than a basketball rim. The Anodyne Hotel, white with green trim, was another matter. The long porch was crowded mostly with elderly people inhaling the salt air. One gray-haired man with a silver mustache and a black ivory cigarette holder dangling from the side of his mouth was explaining to a cadaverous fellow that the sea air was good for one's liver and lungs. The skeleton held a red metal box in his lap inscribed Powers Powder. Pouring some of its contents into the lid, he lit the powder, which gave off an evil-smelling black smoke that the poor man inhaled. Almost immediately, he began to cough and bring up phlegm. I was tempted to tell them both that quitting the weed and the powder would have done more for their health than the sea air, because when they coughed, which they did pretty often, I heard the same rattle of bones that used to sound in Pop's chest. Just inside the front door was the desk. The clerk had a forehead shaped like a coffin and an undertaker's syrupy voice. He seemed a fitting introduction to a hotel with beds as bare as bunks. Our bedrooms were austere and small, just large enough for a cot, a dressing table, a chair, and a towel rack. They were clearly meant for short lets. The few toilets down the hall had a waiting line. We decided to cancel our reservation and return to the nifty place on Columbia Avenue, which still had unoccupied rooms. The clerk at the Anodyne desk was none too happy, but he seemed in no mood to argue with Hank. Our new digs were terrific, and the food was scrumptious. The next morning, Hank went in search of a pair of bathing trunks. He said he wanted a body surf. I begged off, saying I wanted to sightsee, and agreed to meet him for dinner. Immediately, I set out to locate Sam's house, which was in the poorest section of town, on a side street with potholes filled with water from a recent rain. True to form, he had a ratty bungalow. The roof and siding, covered with the same green shingles, blended together to make one bilious blob. Except for two large flower boxes splashing red geraniums across the front of the house and white lace curtains in the windows, the place looked pretty dreary. My aunt, crippled by arthritis, used to hobble around with the help of a cane, but was now confined to a wheelchair, as I discovered when she opened the door. "I couldn't believe my ears," she exclaimed, "when I asked who it was and you said Henny." All my aunts had started to gray from an early age, but Aunt Anna's hair had silvered completely. Physically frail, yet always cheerful and hopeful, with bright blue eyes, she didn't lack conviction or courage. A dyed-in-the-wool suffragette, she would tell the faint-hearted who urged patience, "Wait! Wait for what? This is the only dance that we dance." Settled on the sofa, I realized now that I'd come to Cape May as much to see her as to face down my uncle. Gnawing away at me was the question, how much did she know? Had Uncle Sam told her about the theft? If so, which seemed unlikely, why hadn't she restored the money to Mom? And whether she knew or not, why hadn't she written or called to ask about Pop? Her silence had to mean she knew nothing. Or was she simply too embarrassed to speak because of the theft? The explanation surely had to involve my Uncle Sam. Refusing to let me help, my aunt wheeled into the kitchen and returned with a tray on her lap, holding a pitcher of lemonade, two glasses, two plates, and a sponge cake. I said nothing as she talked about Cape May, the elegant homes, the shops, the beach, and the boardwalk where my uncle pushed her in warm weather. But when she told me how sad she was to hear about the death of my dad, I took my cue. "Ah, you know, Sam said the hospital was refusing all calls, so I wrote. Sam mailed the letters. When he learned Solly had died, I told him to send a telegram and masses of flowers. Yeah, they were lovely. I telephoned Celia. She never said. Your mother seemed so formal, no doubt because of the shock. We talked only a minute or two. It was a shock, all right. I would have called again, but thought it an imposition. Pity, because at one time we were so close. Now I fear I've waited too long. You will tell her my feelings, won't you? Of course. Had I been able, we would have attended the funeral. We really missed you. If not for your dad, Sam could never have made a new life." I did a slow burn. Either she knew and was brazening it out, or my uncle had told her a passel of lies. I was willing to bet on the latter. "Business good?" I said, trying not to choke on my lemonade. At first, we hardly got by, until Sam started advertising. Of all things, he used a sandwich board. It must have sent the right message. I suppose so, because business picked up almost at once. When I passed the shop, the place looked empty. "Really? He says this time of day is his busiest. He probably just hit a slow spot. Did you stop in to say hello?" "No, I wanted to see you first." "I'm flattered. Where are you staying?" My recent experiences had told me to cover my tracks. "At a place near the beach." "Well, you can stay here." "Thanks anyway, but I'll be leaving first thing in the morning." The Afghan covering her legs had slipped to the floor. I picked it up and tucked it in neatly. The parlor at the front of the house faced a small offbeat church called the Light of the Sinner's Temptation, L-O-S-T. In front, a man in stained overalls was trying to pry open a can of paint. First, he used a wooden mixing stick, but when that broke, he tried pliers and finally a screwdriver, which sprung the lid. Stirring the contents, he painted the three steps leading into the church with a thick coat of whitewash. "Never heard of that church before," I remarked. "Sam goes." "Not sure." "He says it gives him comfort. He stops in every morning. I'm surprised because in Newark he rarely attended a service." "I guess some people reach a point in their lives when they need it." My aunt let out a laugh that launched a piece of cake halfway across the room. "Excuse me," she exclaimed, wiping her mouth. "But what would that point be for Sam?" "You said he owed a great deal to my dad." "I'm sure he thinks of him every day."
"How come?"
"Henny, Aunt Anna said with surprise. You of all people should know. At the risk of tipping my hand, I decided to keep prying. Pop's generosity was legendary. It could have been one of a thousand things. You were there. You helped, Sam said. My brain froze. It was stuck. Oh, that, I said to mask my confusion. Yes, that. Without hurting my aunt, I needed to pry out the truth. I don't often get compliments, so I'd sure like to know what he said. You helped load the truck. It was nothing. You're as modest as ever, Henny. No, I knew that Sam was his favorite. Pop told you? Sam did, many times. Making a wild stab, I blurted, the payments every month to Celia, of course, sent to her in New York. I didn't know. Perhaps I shouldn't be saying this, but I did think it strange that your dear mother never said a word. Didn't you wonder if the money arrived? Surely, if it didn't, she would have told me. Well, she never spoke to me about it. Aunt Anna laughed. Mothers don't tell daughters everything. But how would I know? She remarked sadly. I never had children. For some reason, God has cursed me. You can adopt me, I said frivolously. Two moms are better than one. I have, she replied with a teasing look. Oh, it's a surprise. But you just told me. Not what it means, though. When do I learn? The day you go off to college. First, I have to pass the high school equivalency test. You never finished high school? Hated it. She gave me one of those smiles that says, I'm with you. So did I. Remember, I said, I'm left-handed. But before I could outline the problem, she interrupted, so they tortured you too. I was told lefties were sinister. They told me the devil was left-handed. I was therefore possessed. She shook her head. In fact, I was. Demon love had entered my life in the form of your uncle. But that was a long time ago, in a small town in Poland. I'm not sure about college. Too many starched shirts and windbags. My sister-in-law, Rachel, her son, Stefan, he's now a college professor. Poor guy. Misunderstanding, she replied, I don't know what he earns, but he's awfully clever. Would you believe he has a PhD? What's that? Some kind of degree that makes him almost as good as an MD. I'll bet not as rich. She lingered over the cake. He teaches literature, but who in America's going to pay someone for knowing about books? Medicine, yes. Law, yes. That's what draws in the dollars. I know some pretty dumb doctors, like the ones who kept torturing Pop. Oh, it must have been awful. Tears came to my eyes. I'd rather not talk about it. Here, Henny, let me give you Stefan's address at City College. That's where he teaches. I'll ring him to say that you'd like to drop in. Just don't say when, 'cause I'm not sure myself. Whatever you'd like. My early memories of Aunt Anna were sweet. When I was 7 or 8, she brought me a bag of black licorice twists for no reason at all, except that she was in the neighborhood and decided to stop. To this day, I can still hear Mom saying, you shouldn't have. And her gentle reply, no one should ever visit a child without bringing a gift.